threats before they strike.
Support for WMNF comes from our members and Creative Loafing, in print and on stands every Thursday. For daily local culture, news, food and drink, music, and more, visit cltampa.com.
Good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Lori. Coming up in this half hour, we're going to hear Florida This Week from this past Friday night. It's a PBS show that talks about state and local politics. And I'm the host. And this week we'll have two Republicans and two Democrats on the program talking and debating the important issues. As we listen back to this replay of Florida This Week, feel free to call us up and comment. We'll open the phone lines after the show. After 26 minutes or so of the show, and take your phone calls at 813-239-9663. You can also comment about the show at this address online, dj@wmnf.org. Well, we're going to talk about the anniversary of the Parkland massacre and much more coming up next on Florida This Week. Coming up next, the Parkland massacre was 1 year ago, and the battle to end gun violence continues. One multimillionaire mayoral candidate criticizes another multimillionaire for having too much influence in the city of Tampa. The case of the state legislator who dressed in blackface and in brownface. And mold is a problem in base housing at MacDill. Political Insights next on Florida This Week. Welcome back. This week our panelists are Deborah Tamargo is a member of the Florida Federation of Republican Women E-Club. Jim Davis is an attorney and former U.S. Congressman and a Democrat. Bill Bunting is the Pasco County's GOP State Committee man and a Republican. And Tony Collins is the president and CEO of the Blake Collins Group and a Democrat. Well, it's nice to have you all here. Thank you for coming.
Thank you.
Well, Thursday, Valentine's Day, marked the one-year anniversary of the Parkland School shooting massacre. Across Florida, hundreds of thousands of students and adults held a moment of silence to mark the first anniversary of the shooting in which 14 students and three educators were gunned down by a heavily armed former classmate.
I think that something that goes over people's heads is that we lost Valentine's Day forever. We don't get to celebrate a universal day of love, of friendship, of compassion. I don't even want to hear the words Valentine's Day again.
The murders led to a wave of student activism and protest not seen since the days of the Vietnam War. Since Parkland, there have been nearly 350 more mass shootings in the country. That's almost one a day. Mass shootings involve incidents where at least four people are shot, not counting the shooter. In the wake of the massacre, the Florida legislature passed laws imposing a three-day waiting period on gun purchases, giving law enforcement greater power to seize weapons and ammunition from people deemed mentally unfit, banning so-called bump stocks, funding armed guardians on K-12 campuses, and raising the age to purchase a firearm from 18 to 21. Some in the legislature say those measures went too far and they want to repeal some of the laws. This year, the legislature might go further and allow teachers to be armed. The bill has already passed its first committee along a party-line vote. On the gun control side, there's an effort to place a proposed ban on assault weapons on the ballot next year here in Florida, something that Australia did successfully in 1996, reducing gun deaths significantly.
So, Bill, has the state legislature made us safer in the year since Parkland?
I think that the state legislature has. I think Senator Simpson took the lead on that and moved forward with a bill. Although I think that bill is going to be challenged because we've had 18 sheriffs in the state of Washington now that said they won't follow the bill that they just put in there, which is similar.
So what does that bill do?
What it does is it prevents a person that's 18 years old to purchase a rifle. That seems to be the main bone of contention there. They say if they can serve in the military at 18 years old, they should be able to purchase a rifle if they don't have
anything. So you'd like to see that reversed too?
That one, I would. That's yeah. about where I think it should be reversed. I think the incidents, though, come in directly with the leadership in Broward County. The sheriff's department knew about this guy. They didn't do anything. Okay, you had a sheriff's deputy in the school that was a complete coward. He could have stopped that carnage halfway through where it was and cut it down. The guy had psychological problems that didn't come out, and they showed up on a background check. And our biggest problem is with the doctors. Doctors can't come forward and tell the FBI, this guy's got psychological problems, and we don't want him to buy a gun. They have that doctor-patient privilege. That's where the problem lies. That's the one that's got to be straightened out.
Well, and it's not, in fairness, because we've been contacted by people who are with mental health groups. They say we shouldn't just discriminate against people who have mental illness. It's got to be somebody who also has a tendency towards violence.
Well, this guy already had his writings out, didn't he? It was there. It was public view, and the sheriff knew about it.
Tony, what do you think? Has the legislature made us safer in the intervening 12 months?
I think they took incremental steps in the right direction. I talked to my daughters who are in that category. They don't particularly feel safer. They're still worried about school shootings, and we're going in the right direction, but I'm always puzzled when I see that 70% of the people in the country and in Florida want stronger gun regulations, and yet we continue to drag our feet. So moving in the right direction, but I don't feel safer.
Well, Deborah, do you agree with that? Do you think that most people want stronger gun regulations here in Florida?
Well, I think most people want the schools to be hardened, and it's certainly taken us a very long time to get to that point in time. After Sandy Hook, there should have been no question but to harden the schools so that there's no entry. Also, it was an adult failure of the children. When you had the FBI, the sheriff's department, the school board, the school administration, all being notified of the danger that this young man presented, and nothing was done to curtail. And also, the governor has ordered a grand jury investigation of what is being done with some of these programs and how the money is being spent. And evidently, that PROMISE program that kept this kid basically in school and among his peers and able to walk around and do the things he was doing, that was a very detrimental program. There's only so many chances you can give someone before you have to remove them.
Jim, what about Deborah's point? If we harden the schools and the governor's going through with this grand jury investigation of all the school districts to see if they're spending their money wisely, and making sure that schools are safe, are those the right steps to protect young people who might be victims of gun violence?
No, we don't need a grand jury. This is the legislature's responsibility. This is about balancing freedom and security. We know that the legislature imposed requirements on the schools, but didn't give the schools the money they need to pay for this. If you're going to have trained law enforcement in there, I mean, that's an investment you have to make. We've used school resource office programs in the past that have worked well. We shouldn't be arming the teachers. We need to be listening to what law enforcement and teachers are saying about keeping the schools safe.
And what are they saying?
They're saying the teachers don't want to be armed. Mm-hmm. They want to be disarmed of standardized testing. That's what they're focused on. Mm-hmm. I also think we need to have an honest debate about whether restrictions on some of these semi-automatic weapons would make a difference. Bill will tell you, and I think rightly so, that if you write this definition, you need to be careful because you can affect people that are trying to use firearms legitimately. But there's a lot of firearms that are not designed to do with anything other than mass killing. Lastly, we're at the bottom of the entire country in funding mental health services. And a lot of these young men, mostly men, you can spot the problem developing, and with the proper intervention, you can make a difference.
Mm. Just real quick, though, steps are being taken. Here in Pasco County, where I'm from, we have the sheriff and we have Kurt Browning, superintendent of schools. They've got the program in place and they are going to arm people to come on. It's extensive training. They do it in Polk County. The sheriff that chaired this committee, Bob Galtieri from Pinellas County, was opposed to having any guns in the schools. When he came back, he changed that position. And the training that they're going through far exceeds the training for law enforcement. So I think if you're going to put them in there and they're trained and they're legitimate, and I'm talking about teachers included, I don't see a problem with that. If one life is safe, it's better than no lives being saved.
Tony, that bill is moving forward in the legislature to arm teachers.
I think it's a mistake, a huge mistake. When I looked at this issue, I went and studied what the accuracy of the average police officer is. You know, what there, it's like 30%.
You so, mean in hitting their target?
In hitting the target. And I'm, you know, if a police officer, a trained police officer with all kind of training, hits the target 30% of the time, what is a teacher or a part-time security guard going to do? I was in the Marine Corps. I was given a rifle and taught how to use it by some of the best experts, but they didn't tell me that I could walk around carrying it every day down the street. We don't need assault weapons.
Deborah, should we arm teachers?
This is not a mandate. The teachers who do not want to be armed aren't going to be armed. It's no mandate. Many of the teachers today are former military, and they're very well equipped, and they'll go through additional training that's particular to students in schools. It's not a mandate. It just provides more options.
Jim, next year, a group wants to see a proposed ban on semi-automatic weapons put on the state ballot. They're gathering signatures now. You mentioned this a moment ago. Is that a good idea? Should Florida voters ban semi-automatic weapons?
We should, but it shouldn't be done through the Constitution. It ought to be done through the legislature, but the legislature won't act. The fact they're talking about armoring teachers tells you they think something else needs to be done, and it does cost money. A person who's a good law enforcement officer isn't necessarily a good teacher, and vice versa. It really is ridiculous that we're trying to find people that can do both things well. Let's do each thing well. Let's have good teachers, and let's have well-trained law enforcement officers to protect our schools.
And Bill, how big of a fight is the NRA going to put up against this amendment if it gets enough signatures?
It's going to be enormous, because I think it's going to wind up in the Supreme Court, because you have your constitutional rights on the Second Amendment, and there's going to be the challenges, just like these 18 sheriffs in the state of Washington said, we're not going to obey it because it violates the Constitution. 18 sheriffs. That's a lot of counties.
All right. We're going to be talking about this, I think, for the next year. Well, in the Tampa mayor's race this week, the wealthiest candidate in the field raised questions about the influence another mega wealthy person has over the city. The candidate, David Straz, a retired banker, a philanthropist, and a millionaire many times over, criticized the perceived influence the Tampa Bay Lightning owner Jeff Vinnick wields in Tampa. Vinnick is redeveloping a large section of the downtown area with both public and private funds. According to a report in the Tampa Bay Times at a forum this week, in responding to a question about Vinnick's role, Straz said, quote, ladies and gentlemen, we need more transparency, and that is what kind of money is going into Channelside? Who's behind the St. Pete Times? Who's behind All for Transportation? Who's behind a number of these things going around town? Let's get some transparency and find out what's going on. If you look at some of the blogs, you can get a feeling that not everything's great. We need to investigate that much more further. Vinnick is one of a group of local investors who loaned $12 million to the Times Publishing Company, which owns the Tampa Bay Times. The Times says Vinnick has no control over the newspaper's coverage. All for Transportation is the group behind the sales tax increase for transportation just passed by Hillsborough County voters. The Straz campaign released a statement later saying their candidate did not intend to call for a formal investigation of Vinnick. So, Deborah, is there any reason to believe that Jeff Vinnick has an oversized influence on what goes on in the city of Tampa?
Well, I see a conflict of interest between his investments in the Tampa Bay Times and his position in accepting taxpayer funding and supporting All for Transportation. But I don't believe we need an investigation, but oversight, transparency, that we do need. Anytime the public money is being invested with a private enterprise, we need oversight. Or anytime public money is being invested, we need transparency, we need oversight, we need them to be held accountable that the money is going where it was intended to go. And the All for Transportation, what I have concern there is constitutionally, it's our elected officials that are able to disperse funds. And in this case, it looks like they have vested the committee who are not accountable, so that transparency and all of the things that apply to the elected officials don't apply. So I see where he's coming from, and I would say let's have transparency across the board, fair. Wealth has nothing to do with it, but also, you know, maybe some limitations, and maybe the Times should not be writing on issues where their investors are connected. Yeah,
in their stories, they disclose that Vindic is
sure,
one of the investors in that loan. Do you think that this, Bill, do you think this is an attempt by Straz to kind of like make some headlines in the final weeks of the campaign? Because the last poll out shows that he's far behind Jane Castor.
Yeah, and I think, but he's got the money to spend. I looked that up. But the short end of it is, if public money is being used, that's taxpayer dollars, that should be disclosed. There should be a financial thing. If I lived in Hillsborough County and they're using my tax dollars, if Vindic's using it, I want to know why and where it's going.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, that's a matter up to the city government, city council. Jim, what do you think about this race? How do you think it's shaping up? The Tampa mayor's.
Well, let me first say, I think David Straz is right. There should be an arm's length relationship. And the issue here is, who's the best steward of tax dollars? Now, I personally like Jane Castor, but there's a lot of qualified people in the race. But at a time where Tallahassee and Washington are a little bit out of control, I think we're looking for adult supervision. I think David's statement in the heat of a campaign was not a responsible statement. But I think the fundamental issue here is, you're going to have private companies and businesses that are going to fight for what they want. It may not be what we need as a city. There's obviously a balance there. And we want someone who's going to be a good steward of the public dollars and our resources. And that's what this campaign should be about.
All right. You're listening to a replay of Florida This Week on WMNF in Tampa, and the panelists on this show are two Republicans, Bill Bunting and Deborah Tamargo, and two Democrats, Tony Collins and former Congressman Jim Davis. Here's more of the program. Well, State Representative Anthony Sabatini, who is white, is embroiled in a scandal involving two photos. Last week, after a photo showing the Lake County Republican dressed in blackface was discovered, Democrats called on him to resign. Now, a new photo has emerged showing him in brownface, wearing a stereotypical Mexican costume. That photo was sent to the Orlando Weekly by a former classmate who wishes to remain anonymous. Both photos date back more than a decade, when Sabatini was in high school. Sabatini says the photos are just silly stuff that high schoolers do, and that he's never met a single person calling for his resignation who is not a liberal Democrat. Since gaining public office, first as a city commissioner and now as a state representative, Sabatini has been involved in a number of controversial incidents. In June of last year, the freshman representative liked two Facebook posts comparing former President Obama aide Valerie Jarrett, who is black, to a monkey. And after the violent Charlottesville protests, he invited every community in the country to send their unwanted Confederate statues to his hometown of Eustis. The controversy in Central Florida follows demands that other white officials in Florida, Virginia, and elsewhere to step down for having previously made fun of racial minorities. All right. So, Tony, should Sabatini get a pass because this happened in high school?
No.
Why not?
I want to point out that Sabatini has a problem, that he comes from the Steve King, Megyn Kelly public relations environment, where he makes a racist statement, does something that has been documented as being racist for years, and then he says, what racist remark? What do you mean everybody does it? And I agree with him that everybody does it. It's blackface is as American as slavery. It's connected to slavery. It's connected to that whole drama, all the trauma. I find it fascinating that part of his arsenal of discussions about race includes Confederate flags. It includes making fun of black women. He has a pattern. And in the words of Angela Mayu, when someone tells you who they are, believe them. Mm-hmm. So what I see when I see Mr. Sabatini is someone who continues to make the same mistake. He continues to try to defend himself with the, what do you mean it's not racist, or everyone does it, or I was just kidding. And then what he doesn't understand is that blackface, when it comes to racist remarks and blackface kinds of comments, there is no gray area.
Now, in Virginia, similar behavior by other white politicians has resulted in the calls for their resignation stepping down. Some talk about impeachment. Mm-hmm. It hasn't risen to that here in the state of Florida, the Sabatini issue.
I wouldn't call for his resignation either. I think people who vote get to have the kids. They deserve whoever they elect. But I do think that the legislature ought to take a look at it and say, do we really want this person on committees making up policy? Does the GOP want to have someone who can't seem to understand what blackface means, who doesn't understand that association with the Confederate flag, the monument, offends a large number of people?
Mm-hmm. So takeaways, committee assignments.
If I were in a position to do that, if I represent the GOP, yeah. I would talk about doing that. But I think he has a right to run for office and continue to get reelected. He's wrong about what is and isn't racist. And I find it amusing that someone who has the privileged life that he has wants to determine what's racist.
Mm-hmm. Deborah, what do you think about this?
Well, this was Trading Places. Remember the movie Trading Places? Well, his best friend was black. He was white. They were football players. And it was annual senior day, and they decided to trade. You be me, I be you. Fun kind of thing. And, you know, I kind of believe, like Will Rogers, don't let yesterday take up too much of tomorrow. And I think we have a tendency not to learn from the past, which is that's what we're supposed to do. But we have a tendency to just dwell and dwell and dwell and actually make it bigger than it is. So I give him a pass. He's learned from the incident. Let's move forward.
Deborah, what about Tony's point, though, is that it just isn't the photos, but he's shown a pattern since then of doing other things.
Well, the monuments, you know, many people believe we need to preserve the monuments. We learn from them. We learn from the past, and we move forward.
And Valerie Jarrett, the comments about Valerie Jarrett.
Well, that I thought was a little over the thing, but I think we've all liked things that, you know, we hit that button and we're sorry for it. So give him a pass.
I think let the voters decide. If it's an issue, they'll vote him out. If he wants to stay, they'll vote him in.
Jim, should the legislature or the governor get involved in this?
Yeah, they should censure him. If I was a Republican, I'd want him censured. This is really sad. I don't think this young man understands his job. He's supposed to represent everybody, including the people that didn't vote for him. Eustis is a wonderful place. There are people there, Democrat, Republican, Independent. They want people to be treated with respect. He doesn't understand that, and he's persisting in this. I don't know if he's learned or not. I hope he has, Deborah, but this is beneath us.
Jim, and you supported Byrd, Senator KKK Byrd. And I never heard the Democrats talk about censuring him. And he was in the floor of the United States Senate.
I didn't serve with Senator Byrd. And every chance I had when I served in Washington, Tallahassee, I tried to stand up for high standards. And you learn from your mistakes. It's not clear to me this young man is learning from mistakes. At best, this is juvenile.
What I think is clear is that he feels like he didn't do anything wrong. He has people running around saying it was just fun and games. And I would challenge him to ask black people in general, who's laughing?
Yeah. All right. Well, MacDill Air Force Base and bases around the country, there are problems with unsafe housing at the South Tampa base. Mold is causing health issues for about 16 military families.
Some families have moved out only to be told that they need to keep paying the rent on their base housing. Nationwide, according to the Washington Post, thousands of service members and their families are living in military housing that is decrepit and dangerous. The grievances paint a picture of slum-like conditions at bases across the U.S., including black mold, lead, infestations of vermin, flooding, radon, and faulty wiring. A survey conducted by the Military Family Advisory Network found 56% of respondents say they had a negative or very negative opinion of their base housing. Most housing on military bases was privatized after a scandal in 1996 in which the Pentagon reported to Congress that federally run housing was so badly neglected that it posed the risk of collapsing the force. Bay Area members of Congress, Gus Bilirakis and Vern Buchanan, who sit on the House Armed Services Committee, are promising to address the problem.
Jim, it appears that the problems of MacDill are the tip of the iceberg, that it is nationwide. What needs to be done?
Well, I've worked with a lot of these soldiers, and when we're expecting them to take care of us abroad, we need to take care of their families. And a lot of these soldiers have been on extended deployments, so this is a major priority. And the other thing about these military families, they don't complain. They're just like the men and women that are serving. So we owe it to them to bend over backwards and solve this problem. It should be a priority. This is a great example where the Congress needs to conduct oversight because private companies who are trying to earn a profit are supposed to be doing the right thing as well. So I'm confident that they will do that. Also, I'm going to add that today the president declared an emergency and took away billions of dollars from military construction. Hopefully that will not have an impact on coming up with a quick solution to this.
All right. Well, before we go, what other news story should we be paying attention to? Deborah, let's start with you. Your other big story.
Well, I just have to compliment Governor Ron DeSantis off to a very fast step. Today, he issued and really asked the legislature to fund 1,400 vouchers for the backlog that we have of 1,400 students. He's also asked them for a couple of $100 million to address, well, he asked the president to address the environmental issues. He's absolutely going to be one of our top three environmental governors of Florida, Martinez, Bush, and now DeSantis. So I say go, Ron, keep it going.
All right, Bill, your other big story.
Okay, Republicans are going to be energized on three things. One, Senator Joe Gutis, who you know, on his bill to ban sanctuary cities in the state of Florida is going to pass. It's going to be law. William Maddox, director of Tallahassee's James Madison Institute, said 650,000 black women voted in 2018. 18% of them chose DeSantis because of the charter schools, and they documented it. And the last one is, at Mass last week, at Blessed Sacrament, we got a letter from the bishop with late-term abortion, and he declared it murder, and he's going to pretty much lead in and tell people not to vote for anybody that supports it.
All right. Tony, your other big story.
Earlier this week, union members from HART, the transit agency, were protesting and passing out flyers indicating that the buses weren't safe and that they thought the public should know. The administration, the management responded by saying it was a ploy for union negotiations. But I talked with Councilmember Suarez, who says the number one issue is safety, and I think you're going to see a safety report addressing that issue sometime in March.
And Jim, your other big story.
This week, the country lost a giant, Congressman John Dingell from Michigan, who I was privileged to serve with. John said something profound the other day. He said, politicians don't have power, they hold it. Whether you're Republican, Democrat, Independent, it's about the public trust. It's not about the club of which party you belong to. And I think that's something we all need to keep in mind as we go to vote and measure every candidate and expect high standards from our leaders, even if we're going to be disappointed.
All right. He was pretty farsighted. All right. Thank you all for a great show. And thank you for watching Florida This Week. Your comments are always welcome. Please write us at ftw@wedu.org.
Well, that was Florida This Week from this past Friday night on WEDU-TV. And my guests on that panel were Tony Collins and Jim Davis. They were the Democrats on the panel. And Bill Bunting and Deborah Tamargo were the Republicans. We talked about problems at base housing, including McDill. We talked about a Florida politician who dressed in blackface and brownface when he was in high school, but has also made some racial remarks since then. We talked about the anniversary of the Parkland massacre and the Tampa mayor's race. And if you want to comment about anything you've heard here for the last 25 minutes or so, you can call us up at 813-239-9663. Deborah Tamargo accused Jim Davis there, the former congressman, of supporting Senator Robert Byrd, who had for a time been a member of the KKK. When Jim Davis was in Congress, Byrd had long since renounced the KKK. And I'll just do a little bit of fact-checking here on that. And I'm going to a website called Thought.co, and or ThoughtCo, rather. And it has a lot of footnotes on it. But I'll just read a few sentences. During the early 1940s, Robert Byrd, the senator from West Virginia, was a high-ranking member of the Ku Klux Klan. This is before he was elected to Congress. From 1952 to 2010, the same Robert Byrd of West Virginia served in the U.S. Congress and eventually won the praises of civil rights advocates. The legendary congressional career of Robert Byrd began on November 4, 1952, when the people of West Virginia elected him to his first term in the U.S. House of Representatives. He was a New Deal Democrat. Byrd served 6 years in the House before being elected to the U.S. Senate in 1958. He would continue to serve with the Senate, or in the Senate, rather, for the next 51 years until his death at the age of 92 in June of 2010. With a total of 57 years on Capitol Hill, Byrd was the longest-serving senator in U.S. history and, at the time of his death, the longest-serving member in the history of the U.S. Congress. In his 2005 biography, Robert Byrd, Child of the Appalachian Coalfields, Senator Byrd recalled how his ability to quickly recruit 150 of his friends to the KKK impressed a top Klan official who told him, "You have a talent for leadership, Bob. The country needs young men like you in the leadership of the nation." Byrd led the growing chapter and was eventually elected Exalted Cyclops of the local Klan unit. In a 1944 letter to segregationist Mississippi Senator Theodore Bilbo, Byrd wrote, "I shall never fight in the armed forces with a Negro by my side. Rather, I should die a thousand times and see Old Glory trampled in the dirt, never to rise again, than to see this beloved land of ours become degraded by race mongrels, a throwback to the blackest specimen from the wilds." As late as 1946, Robert Byrd wrote to the Klan's Grand Wizards stating, "The Klan is needed today as never before, and I am anxious to see its rebirth here in West Virginia and in every state in the nation." However, Byrd would soon see fit to put the Klan far behind him. Running for the House of Representatives in 1952, Byrd said of the Klan, "After about a year, I became disinterested. I quit paying my dues and dropped my membership in the organization. During the 9 years that have followed, I have never been interested in the Klan." Byrd said he initially joined the Klan for excitement and because the organization was opposed to communism. In interviews with the Wall Street Journal and Slate magazine held in 2002 and 2008, Byrd called joining the Klan the greatest mistake I ever made. In his 2005 biography, Byrd wrote that he had become a KKK member because he was sorely afflicted with tunnel vision, an immature outlook, seeing only what I wanted to see because I thought the Klan could provide an outlet for my talents and ambitions, adding, "I know now I was wrong. Intolerance has no place in America. I apologized a thousand times, and I don't mind apologizing over and over again. I can't erase what happened. It has emerged throughout my life to haunt and embarrass me. And it's taught me in a very graphic way what one major mistake can do to one's life, career, and reputation." That's the words of the late Senator Robert Byrd of West Virginia, was a Democrat. Well, you're listening to WMNF in Tampa, 88.5 FM. And the discussion about guns there drew this reaction from Rose. She says, "Armed teachers, really? ? The discussion is beyond absurd. School is a place of open-mindedness, ideas, and acceptance. It should be a welcoming place that is there for all the community it serves. There is only one school called the Citadel, and it is not in Florida. Schools should not be barricaded and locked in, nor should teachers be armed guards. That is a place called prison. The solution to the problem of school shooting is to control what kind of weapons are available and who has access to them. We are spinning our wheels in this discussion, and meanwhile, more people are dying." That's Rose, who's listening in Europe. And again, if you want to comment, you can call us up at 813-239-9663. And our email address is dj@wmnf.org. I want to play something that happened on Sunday, but let's go to our first phone call. Let's go to Gino in Tampa. Gino, you're on WMNF.
Yes.
Hi, Gino.
I actually, let me try. Okay, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, I actually listened to the lady that was talking, the Republican lady.
Mm-hmm.
When you first asked her, when that guy asked her about, well, he stated about the gun issue, 70% of the population wanted, and she didn't answer that question at all. She went on to something else. She never answered that question, if that was true or false. And then she made a lot, she supported the guy from Eustis with all the things that he's done and continues to do. This, I don't understand how people like this get in their positions. She's supporting this guy, and I didn't really know Big Face was that big that people were still doing it. I know the history of it, but I didn't know that they would continue to do it and so many people did it. If I know the history of it, I know people following me should know the history of it. He's younger than I am. And he continues to do it. And she supports all of that and says, just give him a pass. I don't understand how she's in a position that she's totally wrong. Like the guy who was talking, you ask a black person who's talking, I mean, who's laughing, and they'll tell you, "I'm black." No one's laughing. It's racist. He shouldn't be in his position. They should censor him in the Republican Party. Thank you.
All right, Gino, thanks a lot. Thanks for your comments and your views. Well, our phone number is 813-239-9663. Here's an email from the 352 area code. 352, who is anonymous, writes, "So Democrats can renounce their racism, but Republicans cannot. You people are ridiculous," writes Anonymous. So, Anonymous, thank you for that. Let's go to Chris in Tampa. Chris, what are your thoughts?
Hey, Rob, how you doing today?
I'm good. I can barely hear you, but go ahead.
Can you hear me a little better now?
Not so much, but go ahead. Let's try it.
I want to talk about the
pretty much the biggest story of the century here, and that's that McCabe coming out last night basically saying what Fox News has been saying all along, that they pretty much tried to get, you know, put up a coup against a sitting president that we elected.
Who tried to do the coup?
The Justice Department.
Yeah, I watched that interview on 60 Minutes. Who tried to do the coup? Tell me.
Well, you know, you got McCabe, you got Peter Strzok. You know, McCabe, he was let go for lying.
Chris, let's just be specific. From that interview last night, who tried to do a coup against President Trump?
Look, it's been going. Fox News has been reporting for months and months and months that there's something going on with the FBI and the Justice Department. Everybody laughed. Oh, that's conspiracy theory. Well, now it's all starting to come out, and I mean, it is not good. It is not looking good.
Yeah, but Chris, you're not able to explain to me what the coup is. Chris, I think you missed the point.
Collusion in Trump.
Chris, I think you missed the point of the interview last night on 60 Minutes.
No, I didn't miss the point.
All right, so where was the coup coming from? What happened?
I never hear any of this reported on this station.
But you're not answering the question, and you're not being specific, and you don't have any facts.
Trying to invoke the 25th Amendment on a sitting president, him and Rod Rosenstein?
Well, let's be clear what happened, okay?
He was so afraid
Chris, you're making stuff up. I'm going to put you on hold. Chris, I'm going to bring you back, but I'm going to put you on hold. All right, so Andrew McCabe, who was, I believe at the time, the acting head of the FBI, was interviewed on 60 Minutes last night. And we're talking about the acting head of the FBI about 2 years ago. And he has just written a book. He was fired by President Trump. And in the book, he says that he approached several high officials in the FBI and the Justice Department about possibly invoking the 25th Amendment. One of the things that he was concerned about was what appeared to be President Trump's close ties to Russia. When he put out this idea, he was rejected by the FBI, the head of the legal department of the FBI, and it was not taken up by Rod Rosenstein. Now, McCabe says he had this conversation, but when Chris says it was an attempted coup, McCabe brought up the idea, but it never went beyond the conference that he had, that he talked about last night on 60 Minutes with the FBI's legal counsel and also Rod Rosenstein from the Justice Department. So The coup never got anywhere, and McCabe was, I think, very forthright. He said he had concerns about the president and who the president was allied with. So he brought up the issue, but he is just an FBI official. He's not really able to carry out policy. He's an employee. So if you're saying that there was an attempted coup, this idea was brought up that maybe the cabinet should invoke the 25th Amendment, but it never went beyond the discussion stage when the FBI attorneys and Rod Rosenstein got together with Andrew McCabe. So that's where it ended. There was no attempted coup. So, Chris, those are the facts. So what would you like to say back?
Facts.
Okay, go
you're
ahead.
You're wrong.
Okay, well, how am I wrong? Just tell me how I'm wrong.
Well, you're wrong because then they went on to put out that fake phony dossier that they leaked to the media, knowing that it was unverified.
The dossier had already been leaked to the press before this meeting, before McCabe thought that the 25th Amendment should be invoked because he was concerned about the president. The dossier was leaked before President Trump got into office, and it was sent around Washington, D.C., and within the first few weeks of the Trump campaign, or Trump presidency, rather, it became public. But, I mean, I think you got to keep your timeline straight, and Chris, I don't think you got your timeline straight.
Why don't you think you got the timeline straight. I'll keep your timeline straight. Trust me, I got my timeline.
Well, why wouldn't we care about the timeline? I mean, let me ask our listeners, is the timeline important? Are facts important? Or should Chris just be able to say whatever he wants without a timeline, without facts? What's our phone number? 813-239-9663. So, Chris, last word. Sum it up. Chris? All right, Chris left. Chris, thank you for your phone call. 813-239-9663. Let's go to Bob in Lutz. Hey, Bob, you're on M&F. What would you like to say?
Hey, Rob, I appreciate what you do, sir. Just wanted to say I encourage Chris to go to Google and put in Trump Tower, Moscow, letter of intent, and take a peek at the document signed by the Russians and signed by Donald Trump, where he was pursuing a skyscraper that was going to be the tallest in Europe throughout the run-up to the election and during the election. He was telling all his supporters that he didn't have any connections whatsoever with Russia. Meanwhile, he's pursuing a business deal that could make him hundreds of millions of dollars. And riddle me this one, Chris. Why is it that there's so many people in Trump's orbit that are connected to Russia and they all lie about it? Why is that?
Yeah, there have been some people going to prison for that, too. All right. Bob, thanks a lot.
Thank you, buddy.
All right. Great to hear from you, Bob. 813-239-9663. I'd really, I mean, we could talk about President Trump, but I think the more important issues include gun violence since the Parkland shooting. Also, whether or not somebody who dresses in blackface, but also has made some other statements since his blackface dressing in high school 10 years ago, whether or not that person should be in the legislature, should they have committee assignments, should they be censured, or should they be given a pass because the blackface moment happened in high school. He also made fun of Valerie Jarrett, President Obama's aide, and also suggested that he would welcome having Confederate monuments sent to his town of Eustis. But we can talk about some of these other issues, too. 813-239-9663. Let's go to David in Clearwater. Hey, David, you're on M&F.
Well, that's a short list today.
Well, what would you like to talk about, David?
We could talk about racism a little bit, but I just want to, it's President's Day, so I'm happy for all the presidents that are still alive, and I'm happy for the service of those that are gone. And I'm not so happy with the one that's in the office, but this isn't the first time I've ever been that way. And racism, I love this blackface stuff. When I was in high school in Arcadia, which probably is racist the place could be, my folks used to write a minstrel show for the Kiwanis Club to raise money to use for projects in the community, which included the black section of the community as well as the white section. But I think racism was so ingrained, segregation was so ingrained that nobody knew. Now, we've all become sensitized to it. That's true. But And called into one of the black shows that you have on and told the guy that those people have got to have, African-Americans have to have the most patient psyches of anybody in the world not to have done more than they've done. I mean, to do as much as they have done, but not to complain about it. Just get it done. And I'm sorry that I was a racist in high school, and I'm not anymore.
Davis, how long? Tell me when this happened. When did the minstrel shows happen there in Arcadia?
Oh, that'd be in the 50s.
Okay, in the 1950s. You know, the allegation against State Representative Sabatini is that he did this about 10 or 14 years ago.
Yeah, well, after 64, you know, people have a certain time to get sensitized, but I mean, 64 was the Civil Rights Act. And after that, before that, in Gainesville, they were talking about a multiracial society where you don't think about anybody as being different than anybody else. Everybody gets the same shot. But that was in Gainesville, which was a hotbed of liberalism in 1963. But 64 was the Civil Rights Act. So I think 20 years after that, certainly anybody who's now active in politics should have picked up on that at the time.
Yeah, even later than that, because we're talking about the early 2000s for this member of the state legislature.
I know,
yeah.
And I understand, yeah. And I agree. And there's just sometimes, there was one story about a kid who was talking to his father at the time of the Civil Rights Act, and the father said, you know, I really want to get with the program and be the right kind of person for all of these colors. That's what he said. And the boy said, well, you know, Dad, I think you're just going to have to die. It took us 150 years to get to the point that we're at when the Civil Rights Act was passed. And it'll take some time to weed out all of the vestiges of that because it's just a human nature. And there are folks that, I mean, I know a lot of folks that are African-American that are much better off than I am. I really don't care. I think the president is better off economically than I am, but I certainly don't care about that. Just get along with folks, you know?
Yeah, well, that's the bottom line. All right, David, thanks
and
a lot. Yeah. David, thanks a lot. Thank you for your call. Yeah.
You're welcome.
All right. Bye. So if you'd like to join this conversation, you can call us up at 813-239-9663. Now, here's an email from another anonymous email. This is from the 239 area code. And they say, of course, this guy won't get in any trouble for dressing in blackface. He's a Republican. Rules don't apply to them. The Democrats get in trouble for doing it, but the Republicans don't. And as evidence, we have that woman talking about how Democrats get away with everything because she lives in a conservative, bizarro world where the opposite of what's really happening is what they pretend. That's somebody from the 239 area code writing that. And then here's Charles in Tampa who says, we did not elect this president. The Electoral College did. That's not sour grapes. I didn't vote for Hillary. It is a fact, writes Charles. Charles, thank you for that. Liz writes this regarding timeline. She says, well, do facts and timelines matter? In a court of law, that's all that matters, writes Liz from Spring Hill regarding our caller, Chris. Thank you, Liz. And then Adam writes this. Even if McCabe was so adamant that the 25th Amendment needed to be used, he could do nothing about it. The cabinet members would have to make that decision, writes Adam. And he goes on to write, if they refuse, then there's nothing he can do. These Trump supporters seem to think that he was all powerful or something. Yeah, that's right. McCabe was just an employee of the FBI. He was a top employee, but he was not a policy person. Employees are able to carry out policy, but it's people at the heads of departments, mainly people who are appointed by the president who make policy. So the president and the cabinet make policy, and then their employees carry out that policy. Let's go to Gary in Zephyr Hills. Gary, you're on MNF. What would you like to say?
I just want to remind everybody that coup attempts often involve assassinated leaders. So I don't think this is a funny matter to be chuckled at.
All right. And who do you think, how do you think this comes up in our discussion?
One thing leads to another.
What do you mean?
Just what I said.
What do you mean, though?
Often... this is President's Day, and I don't think laughing at a coup attempt is I don't think it's a funny thing.
Who's laughing at a coup attempt?
Well, you were laughing.
I laughed at the coup attempt. I said to one of my callers, I said, facts do matter and timelines do matter.
Yes, and you know all the facts.
No, but I don't think that Chris knew the facts. I mean, I think I knew the facts.
That was happening.
I think I knew the facts better than Chris did. Chris clearly was listening to Fox News, which is not very fact-based. Gary? All right, Gary hung up. You heard him hang up. 813-239-9663. I may laugh at some of the actions of the callers. But I'm certainly not laughing at the seriousness of our predicament. Let's see, some more emails have come in. This email from 352 says, so what do you think about the Jussie Smollett hoax, Rob? I would think a liberal radio station like yours would be all over and about this gay hate crime. Liberalism is a mental disorder, writes 352. You know, we have not covered that issue just because Hollywood actors are really not our thing very much. We might do something on that from time to time. And in the case of Smollett, the facts were vague. So we might have reported it a couple of times on one of our news headlines. But that was not a big issue for us. Now, I haven't listened to every show on MNF, but maybe one of the other shows did it, but I certainly didn't do a show about it. Let's go to Dave in Spring Hill. Dave, you're on MNF. What would you like to say?
Hi, Rob. You know, you got to wonder what is making these right-wing freaks so angry? I mean, you know, you listen to their voice, and it's always seething. It's like a seething volcano full of rage. You know, they stole the election in 2000. They got their buddies on the Supreme Court to install Bush, even though he really didn't win the election. He proceeded to break the world and get us into a $5 trillion war for nothing. And then, you know, and ended up leaving the entire economy in the country basically in ruins for Democrats to clean up. And now we're repeating the same narrative over again. We've got another psychopath installed in office by the Electoral College, even though he didn't really win the election, and he's proceeding to lie more often and more profusely than even Pinocchio. You know, you just got to wonder what's making these freaks so angry. Isn't there some kind of anger management pill or something they can take for this condition?
Yeah, you know, I think the last caller was suggesting that there was going to be a coup attempt on Donald Trump's life, or rather an assassination attempt on Donald Trump's life. And I think that's why he was acting the way he did.
On top of that, you know, it's the denial, it's the delusions. It's these people are wallowing in some kind of delusional parallel universe of anger, rage, and resentment. That, you know, I just can't figure it out. I can't find a logical source for it.
Yeah,
that's,
you know,
all
David,
I really have to say. Yeah.
All right, Dave. Thanks. I was going to say that your points, though, about President Bush, the last President Bush, getting us into war, is a good one, because we know that there are two people in the Trump administration who have been rattling sabers about two more possible wars. One,
well, you know,
with
ironic.
Venezuela, and the other with Iran.
One of Bush's campaign, or rather one of Trump's wildest bug-eyed campaign promises was that Bush got us into this war and attacked Saddam out of no good reason. But who does he have now in his cabinet? He's got one of the main architects of the entire Iraq war, you know, Bolton. So it just makes no sense that the rage and the anger and the resentment is just rooted in a psychopathic condition. Republican Party, it's not even a political party anymore. It's a psychiatric diagnosis.
Well, I don't know if that's fair, but I think President Trump does have an outsized control over the Republican Party. It no longer is the GOP of the Bush family or previous conservative groups. It is based on whatever President Trump wakes up thinking. And I think Dave makes a good point. If President Trump did think that the Iraq war was a waste of resources, and he thinks that a lot of wars are a waste of resources, then why are we rattling sabers when it comes to Venezuela and Iran? And why do some of those same people that were involved in some of those useless wars, Elliot Abrams involved in the covert wars in Central America, John Bolton, who's one of the leading supporters of the Iraq invasion, Mike Pompeo, who seems to be inclined towards being really tough on Venezuela and Iran. Why are they involved in the administration? I think those are good questions. Again, our phone number, 813-239-9663. Let's go to Karen in Tampa. Hey, Karen, we just have about 30 seconds.
Hey, Rob. Okay, well, I think I can answer his question about why they're so angry. I've been thinking about it. And here's the thing. Have you ever heard it said that when, like, if you're in an abusive relationship, when you leave it is the most dangerous time, because now that person is losing their power over you and they go crazy? That's what's happening here, is that these old white men have basically been owning and running the world, the entire world, for hundreds or, I don't know, maybe thousands of years. And it's starting to change. Women and people of color are saying, no, you know, we want, you need to start sharing the world now. And it is completely freaking them out. They are desperately holding on to their power.
Well, Karen, I think that sounds right. Karen, thanks a lot. We're out of time.
All right, bye.
All right, take care. Well, if you want to comment about today's show, please call us up at 813-238-8001 or record your comment on extension 115. And I'll play your comments back tomorrow morning at 11 o'clock. Sean Cannan is coming up in the next hour. He's going to have all seven candidates who are running for Tampa mayor on in the next hour. So that's going to be a good show. I'm Rob Lurie. Thanks to Frank Knox. He's our phone producer today. This is WMNF Tampa, St. Petersburg.